Hi, this is Millie, and welcome to the Escaping Narcissistic Mothers podcast, where you'll find the validation and love you've been looking for. I can help you navigate the difficult waters of going no contact. Please follow me on Instagram at Escaping Narcissistic Mothers, all one word. Hi, everybody. I hope you're having a good day and a good week and a good month. It's crazy how quickly July is just flying by. Being that today's July 10th already, this is when I'm recording. So I did say in my previous podcast that I was working. I'm always afraid when I've had a job in the last few years to announce it too early, because I almost feel like I jinx it if I announce it. And I have to admit that my anxiety is here. It's present now. And sometimes that happens to me. Like, I could be okay in the beginning of the job, and then when there's a little time and I'm more, what can I say, have more responsibility, I guess, the anxiety just skyrockets. And that's where I am now. It's not fun. It's not fun. And the anxiety stems from just having trauma related to work. A lot of you do know my story. Actually, I don't know who listens. So, when I was in college for 2 years, I was in a college that I loved, and my mother decided that 2 years was enough for me and pulled me out. Now, that's not the reason. I mean, she smeared me with the college situation because she didn't want to take responsibility for saying I just wanted to pull her out. And it's come to my attention recently by several people that why didn't I just, like, take loans out and stay? Because it never occurred to me to go against my mother's wishes, number one. Number two, I couldn't go against my mother's wishes and live in her house because I was a commuter. I was not dorming. So it would have been virtually impossible for me to stay. So I was given a choice when I was graduating from high school. Either you go to college or you work full time. And I chose college. I always had, you know, I always knew I was going to go to college. I love school. And I say love in the present tense because if I could go back right now, I would, right? I love the environment. I love learning. I love just being in a classroom with other students. I just do. And when my mother pulled me out of college, I had no choice but to find a job. And I found a job through my school. And I started working at the age of 19, full-time in an environment that I was not ready for. Okay, working is a crazy environment, right? Up until that point, I had been sheltered and protected, except those weren't really the things that were happening. I was being controlled. Every aspect of my life was being controlled. And so when I started working full time, the first month was okay. And then it was right after the first month that my anxiety got bad. And I didn't even know, guys, I can't explain it. This was 1994. And now you go to an ER and a lot of times they say you're having a panic attack. Back in 1994, anxiety was not a thing that doctors diagnosed you with. Unless you went to a psychiatrist, and even then it was, you know, my experience with a psychiatrist back then was not a good one. So it just wasn't a thing. People didn't talk about having anxiety or depression. It was something that was under wraps, right? I am glad that the mental health community has changed as much as it has. Like, people with anxiety, depression, and whatever else are not ashamed of it. When I was suffering, no one knew. No one knew except for me. Me and my mother, which of course she used it against me. So my trauma comes from feeling sick, because my anxiety is not just being edgy, or my anxiety is vomiting and stomach discomfort and severe dizziness. Like, my legs feel like jelly. There's so many things, okay, that go into when I feel anxious, right? I was in a 2-week long panic attack, is the only way I could describe it. I've talked to my doctors and I mean, they've diagnosed me with panic disorder, because it wasn't just anxiety. The anxiety was so high, I can't even explain. I'm surprised that I'm here sometimes from that experience. It was 2 weeks long. I lost 20 pounds. And during that 2 weeks, my mother would force me to get dressed and go to work. And of course, feeling the way I was, one time I remember for sure I didn't even make it to work. Anyone from New York City and knows the A train. I lived on 181st Street on the A train. I'm giving a lot of personal information here. I would get off on 125th and get on the A train back, right? Because that's really the first opportunity you have to get off and leave, because it was an express train. I mean, you could get off on 175th, but like, by the time I was going to 125th Street, on my way to 125th, that's where I was like, I can't do this, right? So I got on the train and went back home. That was one time, and there was a couple of times that I actually made it to work, but I left because I felt sick. Okay, I felt sick, and right now I feel sick. Right, not as bad as that as back then, because I mean, just having the understanding of what's wrong. But back then, I had no idea what was happening. That's a very scary thing, to have nausea and dizziness, and you can't sleep. And you don't know what's happening to you. You have no idea. You don't know what's wrong. That is extremely distressful. So that was 2 weeks long that was going on. And then one day I just said, enough is enough. And I got up. Except I asked my therapist years ago, how come I can't do that anymore? How come I can't just say, enough is enough, and get up and just, it just gets better. And she said, as we get older, we lose that ability to recover from extreme anxiety. So now it's more working on lessening the anxiety and just trying to work through the trauma. And I'm doing EMDR therapy. If you don't know what that is, just look, Google it. EMDR. okay? And it's a way to process trauma quickly. And I've had 3 sessions, but this one, I have one today, this afternoon. And this one is going to target just that situation with working at an age where I wasn't expecting to be working, just not being done with being a kid and being forced to be an adult from one day to the next. It's what happened. I mean, I was 19 going to turn 20, and it wasn't like it was a kid's job, you know, what the kind of jobs that 20-year-olds get, you know? No, it was a corporate job. I don't want to say corporate because it was a nonprofit. It was a very important hospital. I guess it's okay to say after all these years, I got a job at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. If some of you may know Sloan Kettering, right? It's the number one hospital in the country for cancer. And I was working in the HR department. And that's not the kind of job that a 19, soon to be 20-year-old should have. Okay, there was a lot of responsibility there. I mean, I was working in human resources, not in a research lab or anything like that. But I mean, still, you know, I was working in this big company. I didn't know how to deal with people in a work setting. People will scratch your eyes out, you know, when you're in a work setting. And the situation of how I got the job was, it made it even worse, because I was referred to my boss by the woman at the college I was in. And so there were people internally who had applied for the job, and they gave it to me, and that created a whole other level of not liking me. So I was in a really tough position. I was. The good thing, or the good outcome of this situation, is that I did, in fact, stay there for 8 years. I'm sorry if I'm a little, when my anxiety is high, I lose my train of thought a lot. But I worked there for 8 years. I was there from 1994 until 2002 when I had my daughter. So I grew up, is how I say it a lot. I grew up at Sloan Kettering, right? And I'm grateful for Sloan Kettering because they allowed me to go part-time when I was in school, when I went back to school on my own. Different school, but I went back to school and I paid my own tuition, and I was married to a toxic man. So, you know, it was a difficult situation. It's amazing that I graduated, but I did, and I am very proud of that. So now I'm working, and it is also a well-known nonprofit, may I add. one with a great reputation. I have a boss that I couldn't imagine having a nicer boss. This person is just kind to me. He is flexible. He's very nice. I don't know how else to put it. And yet here I am. Here I am with anxiety. Last week I worked 2 days because it was the July 4th. It was the weekend of July 4th. July 4th was on Tuesday, so we were off Monday too. So I only worked Wednesday and Thursday because I'm working part-time. And the anxiety was so high, I felt I was sick in the mornings. I noticed that, like, around lunchtime, I started to feel better and better. And even when I've been home with anxiety, that's how it works. I'm anxious, anxious, anxious. And then as the day goes on, I start to calm down. Right? Around 1 or 2 in the afternoon is where the anxiety seems to go, oh, you're fine. But I still have to live all those hours in the morning feeling anxious. And I'm talking about this because I know where my anxiety comes from, but I always thought the day that I figure this out, because I've been going to therapy since I was 25. Because of different things. When I was 25, I went to therapy because I didn't quite know what the heck was wrong. Okay, I didn't understand what was wrong, but I know I didn't feel right. And I had a terrible therapist. That woman should have had her certification taken away from her. She was horrible. I mean, beyond horrible. But I didn't understand why I felt the way I did. I was unhappy. And again, this was during the time that I was working, going to school, married, and had my parents in my life, and my husband was a narcissist. I don't say that often because it's taken me years to admit that I was married to someone who was a narcissist, because how could that be? But it's so common, right? If you were raised by a narcissistic mother, that you're going to marry a narcissistic person, right? And that's what I did. Except he is the kind that, you know, most narcissists, like, you have a hard time. Not a hard time. It's distressing because people don't believe you. They think the narcissist is a great person and whatever. And it's you, right? He is that times 100. He comes off as a person who is painfully shy and just a person who would never hurt anyone. He was always the one that people ran to in the family. I mean, everyone has passed away at this point, even his own mother. But he was painfully shy, you know? He is. You kind of meet him and go, wow, you feel kind of uncomfortable. But yet he was toxic, really toxic. So I didn't understand what the heck was going on. I've been going to therapy ever since I was 25. And I finally found a therapist recently, a couple of years ago, that her thing was narcissism. Right? And she's in my town, literally 5 minutes away from my house by car. And what I got from her was validation about my experiences with my mother, with my ex-husband, and with my father, right? She gave me validation. I knew that I had to, my mother has passed away. Like, I had started seeing her and my mother passed away like a few months later. My issues were coming into 100% acceptance that my father was toxic, which I talked about him in 2 podcasts back, right? And then my husband was toxic as well, right? So thanks to her, I went no contact with my husband. My daughter's going to be 21 at the end of this month. So there's no reason for me to be in contact with him unless there's an emergency. But I had to let go of my father completely. And I've done all that. But I'm still anxious. I'm still back in square one, it feels like. Now, I am doing EMDR therapy, which is supposed to process trauma and the things that I've already processed, I do feel like they're not in my mind. They're not affecting me. Today's session is going to really prove to me if EMDR is effective. I do believe it is. My therapist recommended that I do EMDR and recommended this person because she has done EMDR with her. The therapist that I'm going to for EMDR does EMDR with someone else. This is a proven, scientifically proven, except they don't know why exactly it works, method of processing trauma. So as I consider the situation of being yanked out of school and put into a full-time job at 19, not ready for this, that's what's going to be processed today. And I hope that it works, because feeling anxious to go to a job that is not a bad job, because that makes me feel, this is the thing, I feel like I'm never going to be able to get past it, get past a certain point with working, if I'm in the best possible scenario. I'm working part-time. I have a boss who I really like. And yet, I'm anxious. Why am I anxious? Again, I think it is because at this point, you know, the first few weeks you're at a job, it's learning, right? Adjusting, learning. You're not doing very much. And now it's at the point where I'm starting to do things. And the responsibilities, I think, is what is making me anxious, right? Starting to have these responsibilities that I have to actually do the work, right? Not just sit there and watch or learning. I know enough to do it. I wish I didn't have this issue, you know? And I really do hope that EMDR therapy is helpful. I don't know if any of you listening have done EMDR. EMDR stands for, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. I know it's a lot of big fancy words. It has to do with the eye movement, but it doesn't have to be eye movement. It could be, because my therapist doesn't actually use eye movement. She uses beats in your, like I have headphones on and I hear a beat on each side of my head, just back and forth, and then I hold on to these little two, I don't know what to call them, these little machines, and they vibrate along with the beats. And you have to focus on a traumatizing experience and see what comes up. And that's how you process it. And it works. There's something about the two sides of the brain. They don't really know. The person who came up with this, and this is a relatively new thing. It's probably been around longer than I've known, but I heard about it a few years ago, always being in the mental health community, you know, online, and I've heard about it. So I really am hoping that today I can reprocess the trauma with my mother. Not with my mother, that would take forever. I've put my mother where she is. She's dead. And she's dead. She's not a present thing in my life. But it is certain situations that have been affecting me my entire life. Yesterday, I broke down a little because sometimes I think to myself, why didn't I see it sooner? And that's not something that we should be saying, because the God's honest truth is, why would we? You know, she had surrounded herself with people who supported her. And how would I know? How would I know? Right? You know that certain things don't feel right. But for the most part, what she did to me was make me feel like I was always wrong. Not wrong. Not even wrong is the wrong word here. That I was bad. That everything I did was bad and sinful is more of the feeling. It's not wrong. I was a bad girl growing up, right? I was a bad girl. Everything I did was bad. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. When I was in the seventh grade, I went to an all-girl Catholic high school that had a seventh and eighth grade. And I was in seventh grade there. And they had a drum corps. And to this day, I still wish I had done it. But I wanted to be a drummer in the drum corps, and I should have done it, right? When I got into ninth grade, I should have just said, screw it, I'm doing it, I don't care. But my mother said, fine, if you want to join, join. And I did, and what happened was she didn't like having to pick me up 3 times a week late from school because I was, you know, 12, and it was, you know, Washington Heights, New York. So she told me I couldn't continue. Later on in life, she would tell me, you don't finish anything you start. Look at what happened with the drum corps, except it wasn't me who did that. It was her. I didn't finish because she didn't let me, and she had control. And then when I got into high school, I didn't think of it. I guess it was just more like, no, I'm not. I probably won't finish, because she had convinced me of that. So she used any situation that she could to make me feel like I was bad, right? Like what I did was bad, everything I thought was bad, everything I did was bad. And I still think that way. And it's not conscious. It's not, I'm not telling myself you're a bad person or everything you do is wrong and bad. But it's subconscious. It's in there stirring around saying, oh, you're bad. You're bad. And it's prevented me from having a fulfilled and happy life. And I'm at the point where I need to have that. I need to have the happy, fulfilled life in every area of my life. And it's difficult when that's the recurring thought in your head is you are bad. You are wrong. You are bad. I think I talked about this situation that I'm going to bring up now recently, probably in the having two toxic parents. But I had a fight with my mother over something that I had not done. She was accusing me of something I hadn't done, which was common. I remember being 13 and being accused of things I hadn't done. But I was 18 and I was fighting with her. I was fighting back. I was defending myself. Reactive abuse, right? That's reactive abuse. And my father got so angry at me, even though he knew I was right. He knew I was telling the truth. I know that he knew it. Okay? I know that he knew it. How? I don't know. But I know that he knew it. And he went to choke me. I'm not going to say it the way I used to. He lunged at me. No. He was going to choke me. I guess the end result was to kill me, because I don't really see when people go to choke someone that their intention is to just choke them and leave them. Usually the reason the person stays alive is because someone interferes, and that is what happened here. He didn't actually get to choke me. My mother got in the way. And the reason I believe she got in the way was because she was thinking of the consequences. If my father choked me and he didn't, if he killed me, oh crap, right? I'd be dead, but in the end, she'd be alone because he'd be in jail. Although I'm sure they'd try to cover it, but I don't know how they could. But more likely, if he choked me and I didn't die, which would probably be what happened, what do I do? Do I call the police? You know, there's so many scenarios that could have happened there. Anyhow, I don't even remember where I was going with that. That has been a big thing in my life, that moment where he choked me. And I did EMDR with that. I'm not crying about it. So it works. EMDR works. Because every time I used to talk about that, I used to cry. Because why is my father choking me? Because he's an a-hole. There's no other way to say that. Okay? He is a weak, spineless a-hole of a person who is not a good person in any way, even though that's how I saw him. I put him on a pedestal. So that is one of the situations in my life that has affected my entire life, right? My father was going to kill me, and that's the truth of the matter. And I don't even care. I know I asked you in the last podcast to please, if you have the intention or if you've thought about starting a podcast or writing a book or writing a blog or doing a vlog, putting yourself on video is really, I get that that's hard, but you can do a podcast anonymously. I did for a long time. I was Juliet Barbaza for a long time. That's not my name. I was getting emails from people and it's a Dear Juliet, and I could tell you why it chose that name in particular, but it's a long story. But please do it, because we need to have more people out there aware. And the people that you have to convince, this is not about convincing anybody. We are sharing our experience so that other people feel validated. That is why that's why I do this. And little by little, I have been, you know, you guys know my real first name. I mean, that's my nickname. It's on my first, but that is what everybody calls me. It's not, you know, everybody calls me my full name. No, no, no. My full name is kind of a dead name to me. Because the reason why I was given that name is all a lie, and people can't pronounce my full name. So I have been Millie for many, many years, since third grade. So that is my name. And no, I haven't put my last name on there, but I give you, you know, I slowly am more open about who I am. Because it doesn't matter, you know. If someone wanted to sue me for defamation, go right ahead. Go right ahead and sue me for defamation. It doesn't matter. They're not going to win. It's very difficult to win on defamation, and I'm not lying. And that's when defamation comes into place. Defamation is when you talk about someone and you're lying. If you're not lying, it doesn't matter. It's not defamation of character, right? And if you're not specifically saying a name, right? You know my first name, but I'm not the only Millie on the planet. My father, for example, even if my family, and I'm pretty sure that my family's heard the podcast at some point. I'm not under any guise of not knowing, because I stupidly told my second cousin, it was the last person I had contact with on that side of the family, on my mother's family, and I told him about this, so he knows. It's not like I have it hidden. He knows. If he doesn't have the link or he forgot, that's not my problem. But the people I talk about, they know. If they listen to it, they know I'm talking about them. But nobody else would know. That's the thing. Nobody else would know. And that's where defamation comes in, too. It's like, I'm not putting their name in the newspaper or on the news. Although, you know, if I were to just say, I don't have to put in the newspaper. That it's these family members of mine live in Miami. And any of you that, I don't know if there's maybe one of you listening to this that understands Cubans and Miami. If I were to tell one person in Miami my story, it would just get spread and twisted. And all of Miami would know within 24 hours because that's how Miami works. And I would rather be cut dead than live there. As a matter of fact... I know that this podcast is a little nuts because that's how I'm feeling today, a little nuts. I am a big Depeche Mode fan for my Gen Xers that were fans of Depeche Mode back in the 80s and 90s. I've been their fan for many, many years. And 40 years now, it's crazy. And they're doing their Memento Mori tour, and they did put dates in. I thought I was not going to see them. I was so sad. See, that's... I always cry when I talk about them because all of us had something in our lives that we felt... attachment to, and mine is Depeche Mode. I felt like listening to their music was the one thing I had throughout my life. The one thing that made me feel better. And not seeing this particular tour was going to kill me because I think it's over. A lot of people do because one of their band members died. Anyway, there were two dates in Florida. One was in Miami, which is closer to me, and one is in Orlando, which is farther away from me by about an hour and a half, okay? And I bought tickets at the Orlando one. So if any of you are going to the Orlando, give me a shout out. Maybe we can meet in person, right? October 10th, Orlando Amway Center, right? If you're here and you're going, let me know. Cuz I'm willing to meet someone who's been listening to my podcast. Because I don't really put videos out there. I was doing it on Instagram, but I don't anymore. Email me. I have the email in the description. Or go on Instagram and send me a DM. Maybe we could have dinner before the concert, right? I booked the hotel and everything already last night. I'm just so excited about this. This is something I have really been looking forward to for a long time. We bought these tickets months ago already. It was like April, I think, that we bought the tickets, or March. And it's inching closer and closer. Anyhow, so the theme in my life has been, you are wrong. You are not good enough. You are sinful. Right? What you do is sinful. And this, I mean, this started when I was very, very young. I can remember being young and having to kneel in front of a saint to forgive me for doing something that didn't deserve being forgiven for because I hadn't done anything wrong. So you can imagine that I have a very complicated relationship with religion. More than not, I don't. You know, I just don't. Because my mother showed me that religion is used to control and used to manipulate. I know a lot of you have been there where your mother would say, honor thy mother and thy father, but look in the Bible to see what the entire phrase or the entire, you know, thing says. Because it also says not to anger your children, but they leave that out conveniently. In a normal circumstance, honor thy mother and thy father as one of the Ten Commandments is absolutely correct. You should honor thy mother and thy father. That doesn't mean that you let them abuse you. That's different. You honor your parents because they've honored you, because they have treated you well. So I'm rambling on about all of this, but because the underlying feeling is I am not good. Everything I do is not good. And the day that my father went to choke me, I felt that that I was wrong somehow, even though what they were accusing me of was they were wrong about. I had not done. Literally, that is not something I had done. But I always felt responsible. I took on the guilt, even though I hadn't done anything. I took it on, you know, because you can always find something. Oh, I should have done it this way or that way. Not knowing what you should have done is called the cops right then and there because that was attempted assault by your father. This police station was around the corner from where I lived. But I know that I can't live my life thinking I should have known better. I should have left the house when I was old enough. You know, I should have just left. I mean, there are people who follow me on Instagram that have left, have run away from home. And I totally get it. And part of me wishes I had done something like that where I had just left home. Because I was in such a toxic environment. And I'm still dealing with the outcome of that. My mother is dead and I'm still anxious. You know, I was thinking about the book, The Body Keeps Score. I know a lot of you have heard of it. And I have it and haven't read it. And that's not good. I should read it. But I have an autoimmune disorder. When my anxiety is high, my body does not feel good. Yes, the body keeps score. It absolutely 100% keeps score. So I hope that if any of you, because not everybody, just because you were raised by a narcissistic mother doesn't mean that you have to have anxiety. I am prone to anxiety. They say that anxiety is inherited, that you're just prone to it, and if you're prone to it, and then you have a toxic parent, or parents, in my case, then it's worse, of course, but not everybody has to live with anxiety all the time like me, and have consequences. But I am at a point where I don't want to let the anxiety rule my life anymore. I want to get past it. I want to live. I want to prove to myself that I can. And my therapist has told me to give myself a break, to not give myself that pressure. And I understand that. But it's been so long that I just need that win. You understand? I need that win. I can work and I can be okay and I can surpass the bad parts or the anxiety that I feel and be successful and move forward with my life, right? That's the hardest part for me. That is the hardest part for me. Is just moving on from the anxiety, right? Feeling sick and going, all right, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to get up and do it anyway. It's funny, if you see me stop, I'm in my bedroom. And for those of you that are American, I don't know if they have this abroad, but I have the Fire Stick, and you know that Amazon will pull pictures. And some of the pictures are, unfortunately, I told my husband, I said, can you change the album? Because I don't like the pictures that come up. Some of these pictures are pictures of the day that I went no contact with my mother. Because, oh, here we go. Here it is. September 14, 2017. This was the day that I stopped talking to my mother when I realized that they had power and we didn't. We were at a stranger's house pretty much. And the picture, he had these dogs, and the pictures, the dog is licking my face. Not a bad moment, but that is the day that I went no contact with my mother. And that's why I don't like that album, because it's pictures of the past. Or if not, it's a picture of me before I was diagnosed with Graves' disease. And I was feeling sick, right? And you can see, it's funny, my face got really round when I had the Graves. It's so strange. I'm looking at these pictures going, look at my face, it's all bloated. And that's one of the things that can happen. Anyway, I have rambled on forever today, and I just want to say that don't feel bad if you're struggling. Even if you've done everything right, you can still struggle. Because cutting off people isn't the solution to what all the things that already happened. Right? Those things are still there. And you have to learn to process that. You know, not push it aside. Because it's gonna persevere, believe me. My anxiety may be pushing back on my EMDR. This might be what's happening. Is that my anxiety's like, oh yeah, you want to get rid of me? We'll see. You know, that kind of thing. Because our brains are accustomed to one way of being. And I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to tell my brain, well, no, you're wrong. And I'm not going to deal with it. And my brain's like, uh-huh, yeah, I don't think so. I think that's part of what's happening. I think my brain is just pushing back. Because as it turns out, I've been feeling more anxious since my last EMDR session to this one, which was it was 2 weeks ago. So hopefully this one is going to be more effective at breaking that cycle, breaking that connection with my anxiety. Anyhow, I'm going to go. I have been talking forever. I hope that this was helpful in any way. This is, you know, if this is in any way helpful to you, to hear, I still get anxious. I still don't feel good. I am trying something new. The important thing here is don't give up. don't just, I did that for years. I gave up. I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not participating in life. Okay. And then COVID really put a, really helped with that. You know, if I have it in my head, I don't want to, I'm anxious, I don't want to work, I can't work. And then COVID hit, nobody was working. Guess what happened? Everything got worse. And I'm starting to come out of the weeds right now and seeing the sun. And I don't want my pre-programmed anxiety to stop me from succeeding. And I don't want anything to stop you. And I hope that this has been helpful. I've always been honest on here, right? Honest to a fault. Sometimes I've said things that I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But I put it out there anyway, right? Even if I don't agree with everything I say. Or not that I don't agree with it. It's just I think, oh, that was too much, you know? But the important thing is this. Don't give up. Don't give up. Keep trying. Keep trying. Especially if you have mental health issues, keep trying. Because there's something. If it's not a medication, because it may be, right? I'm not anti-medication. It just doesn't work for me. I tried right before I started working to get on a medication, and my anxiety went bananas. It was bad. I could not. I stopped taking it. It took days before I felt the normal level of anxiety as opposed to the chemical level that had been, you know, given to me. So don't give up. Keep trying. Keep trying. One more time. Just one more time. You know, that's how working was something that I thought I wasn't going to be able to do. But I tried one more time. And I'm working and I'm struggling, but I'm hoping that I will be able to do this and be successful at this job. Because the job is not a monster, even though that's how I see it or how it feels to me. Well, guys, I'm going to stop there. I love you. I know you know that. I know that you understand that these podcasts are meant to give you validation, to give you support, and to tell you that you are worthy, that everything that your mom or your dad did to you or said to you is wrong. You are a good person. You're meant to be here. You're meant to do great things. And great things can be anything, can be a great thing. And that all of us deserve to have happiness and joy. And my joy is going to be working, feeling normal, whatever that means, and going to my Depeche Mode concert, which happens to be 3 days after my birthday. So that's joy, right? Not that life is easy, because it isn't. Life has its challenges besides what our parents did to us. But there are moments of joy and conquering things. And that's where we are right now. Right? Just try one more time. I love you all. Until next time.